Hey guys, we try to keep the Chicks in Charge free for everybody. The one thing that we do ask though is that if you get any value out of our episodes or any of the content that we produce on social media, please share with a friend, share the show, please leave a rating for future listeners, and that way we can try to keep this free of ads and any subscription costs that you might have.
Hello, friends. So glad that you are tuning in again this week to listen to us. I am Jess.
I'm Shasta.
And we are the Chicks in Charge. And we are here today with Joey Little with Tascket Automotive.
Hi, friend.
Hi, Joey. Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm just, I was deleting a lot of just junk email over here that I get from. I think I get about 7,000 emails a day.
Oh, God.
That say, wow. Hey, try our AI product out. Yep. Hey, try our CDP out.
Yep. It's never ending, is it? Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you do with Task Auto Group.
I'm the chief marketing officer for the Task Automotive Group. We have 34 stores. We are primarily New England, the Yonkers, White Plains, New York area. Also, I've got 4 stores in Chicago, 3 stores in Florida. And then the furthest west we go is Kansas City, Missouri, which is where I call home. But the original Tasca Automotive, it was Tasca Ford, which is in Cranston, Rhode Island, which is our kind of our mothership. So,
wow. So you kind of do all of it for all of the stores, right? All the marketing.
So it's kind of a funny situation with that. So originally I had been on the vendor side for my 12-13 years. I was part of the original Vin Solutions crew that built that. We sold it to Auto Trader, of course. We moved on, built another company called MotoFuse, which we did some customer data. We merged with AutoAlert, the data mining platform. Was with them and the executive team up until about COVID time. Branched out and did my own thing. A lot of people don't know is that here in Kansas City, Gary Crossley Ford was the birthplace of Vin Solutions. And so I've been working with Todd Crossley at Gary Crossley Ford, I mean, for this entire, last 15 years. Todd asked me to come on as a VP of marketing for the one single store. Actually, we had 2 points. We had a used store too. Within 2 years, we made a deal with the Tasca Automotive Group and Gary Crossley Ford. Went into and merged in with the Tasca Automotive Group. And at that time, they asked me to come to the executive level to run basically fix websites first. And from that, it became a marketing kind of position because I have this really hardcore brick wall between marketing and sales operations. And there is a ton of DPs and GMs out there that doesn't think there should be a wall between those two. We've proved that it is important to have that wall. So when you think marketing in the dealership, a lot of people say Auto Trader, they say cars.com. That's more of a sales operations.
Right.
Well, we focus, in the team that I lead, we focus on website, we focus on reputation management, we focus on social media, the true operations of marketing and not sales.
Right.
That makes sense.
It does. How long have you been with Tasca Automotive?
We merged 2016. What year is it now? 2024. We merged January 1st, 2023. And that's a whole big difference in 2016.
That is
amazing. So it's been a little over, what is that, a year and 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a relationship with the Tasca family because of my roles with AutoAlert. Tasca Automotive Group, Bob Tasca III was a part of our 20 group, our Ford 20 at AutoAlert.
So have you ever had a life outside of automotive? Prior to starting with Vin Solutions, what industry were you in?
Broadcasting.
Okay. I did see that actually. When we were doing our research, I saw that you were a on-air personality a couple of years.
Yeah, it was back when shock jocks were all the rage. So I went by Joey Bags on Topeka's Rock Leader V100.
Bags.
So great. Had a shaved head, a big long goatee, used to ride a motorcycle a lot. My tattoos were showing.
Okay.
It was a whole persona that I had, which was cool in the automotive because I also was the face of the rock station, which meant that the car dealerships that were local wanted to use me as their whatever for their live remotes or commercials. So
that's so how really did neat. You transition from being a radio personality? That carries a big load as is, but then moving from that to Vin Solutions.
So I got tired of being broke. Being in broadcasting, also being in a market like Topeka, Kansas, which is, it's a medium market, but still it's like, that's where dreams go to die.
About Joplin too.
They do.
I had gone back to school and, just to take some photography kind of, and videography, cause I'm old. I'll be 50 this year. It's crazy.
You're so old.
If you have a degree, that you got like in 96, right? In marketing or business.
It's so irrelevant now.
Right. So you have to keep sharpening that saw. So I went back to school for photography and video because I saw when I was in broadcasting that social media and content marketing was like, it was going to be the future, right? Video is going to be the future. I saw this way back in like 2004. And so I did that. When I left, I started my own business of photography and video for commercial, whatever photography. And a buddy of mine had a job opening at this little startup that was in Kansas City called Vin Solutions. They were looking for some kind of trainer or whatever it was. It was like maybe 12 employees. So I didn't even know what Vin Solutions did. In fact, when I went in for my interview, I thought they were a magazine publishing company. I had no clue. I did zero research. I could care less. All I wanted was a 9-to-5 job where I could get insurance and a little bit of, you know what I mean? Without, when you own your own business, you're kind of, you know, you guys are entrepreneurs, you know, there's a lot of costs that happens. What's really funny is I had a YouTube series that was online called Fed and Faded, where me and my buddies went around Kansas and went to these local diners. And we did kind of a cross between Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives and Man's versus Food. Put them on YouTube. They actually got picked up by the local CBS affiliate in Topeka. The CEO of Vin Solutions at the time, Mike DeLay, apparently saw my resume and looked that up on YouTube and thought it was one of the greatest things he had ever seen in his entire life, along with a series called Masterpiece Meatloaf.
That was you too?
That was me as well.
I have to remember to go back and look these up when we're done.
Oh, the Masterpiece Meatloaf is gone because I used a copyright music. But the reason that door opened for me is because when I went into, when I was like interviewing with the support manager or something like that, his name was Bob, right? And Mike DeLay, this CEO of this company, it's a startup company, comes busting into this, not busting, but he walks in and he tells Bob, you know, hey, take off. I'm going to talk to Joey. Mike wanted to do video. He understood content. He understood that as well. He understood also a lot of the talking heads that were in automotive at the time. We're talking like 2009, 2010. Was all the same kind of garbage. Sitting there going, the reason I use this CRM is blah, 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 right? And he saw Masterpiece Meatloaf and he saw Fed and Fade and he's like, I like this guy. He's not applying. I don't even have a marketing team. So they created the marketing department at Vin Solutions for me. And we came in and we just started having fun. He didn't want the talking head video. So we did some more, entertaining type stuff. And as Mike says, the rest was history with him and I. As you know, I think a few years later, 2011, we sold the company for, a couple $100 million. We just kept, Mike and I are still close to this day. We still work on projects together. So,
wow, that's really awesome. And it's really cool to kind of hear the chain of events that happened that led you to where you're at now. What do you think? I mean, I know that so much has happened in the last several years, including COVID. But what do you think the biggest difference between when you started at Vin Solutions to where we're at now in the world? What do you think that is? And from a marketing perspective.
Marketing and automotive specifically, retail.
Mm-hmm.
The choices that customers have. The places that customers can go to get information or to submit leads or just to do anything. And also the way that customers want to be communicated with. Those are the two biggest things that I've seen.
And I think that, being in the BDC, we hear a lot of back and forth on that. You know, we have dealers that come to us that they want to do as much as they can over the phone, and they're really adapting to the new way of doing things and meeting their customers where they are. And then we have other dealers that'll call us and they absolutely will not do that. They will not take any information over the phone. The customer absolutely has to come into the store. where do you think those dealers are going to be in the next 5 years?
So the ones that are trying to create the path, the customer journey, instead of the ones allowing the customer journey to happen naturally.
Correct.
Well, they'll probably be on LinkedIn saying that they are looking for an open position as a GM or something at another store somewhere. The thing that I noticed a lot about those type of GMs, those type of dealer principals, whoever's those decision makers at those antiquated type dealerships, is that they don't know what they don't know, right? If they're selling 65 cars a month, right, on average, that's, they think their goal should be 70, when really their goal should be 150, right? And so they don't know what they don't know. So they're using the antiquated system to try to hit that 70 mark, because then they're going to buy pizza for the entire sales team in the BDC, right? And be like, hey, we made our number. Like, no, Dippy, you should be doing 150 a month easily, right? So it's just strange. In our industry, in the automotive retail industry, we have the largest availability for income, but the lowest secondary education needed for it, right? To be a manager on a sales team in a lot of dealerships, so I won't say all of them, is that you just have to show that you can close deals and you know, that's it.
It's true.
I say this to my team all the time, to the marketing team that I tend to be like the head of, right? And it's not my team, it's our team. I'm a horrible manager. I'm a get stuff done guy. I build websites, I make things happen, but I am a horrible manager. My team has to manage up. That's how every dealership, not every, but most of them are. They have horrible management.
Right.
They have, you know, and lazy management, because they were able to close 30 deals a month on average, you know, or 25 cars a month, because now you're going to be a sales manager. It's like, it doesn't work that way. And then all of a sudden they think they're marketers too. That's the next step, right?
I mean, and we get that all the time too, from dealers that are calling us saying, why are you only sending in customers that have bad credit? And we're like, look at the marketing you're doing. We don't hand you your leads. We just work them.
Yeah. I make the deal with my GMs. Listen, I'm never going to try to close a deal for you. I'm not the guy to even try to sell a car. That's not me. Right. So let's let you do your job. Let me do my job. And we have a great relationship that way. Because I don't claim to close deals.
Right.
But they got to keep their hands out of the marketing pool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, but it's the trust as well. It's the trust that's there as well. Dealers have been screwed over by marketing vendors for so long. And the reason I say that is, and we talked a little bit off air about this, is that marketing vendors, to keep a dealer happy, they will basically do whatever the dealer wants them to do, even if it's dumb. And it's not going to bring in any ROI. It's going to, you know, it doesn't hit any KPIs. And after a while, the dealer, you know, forgets that the marketing company is just trying to appease them, and they think they're a garbage marketing company, right? They're like, oh, they're doing nothing for me. Well, look at all these requests you had because you thought you were the marketer.
Well, and I think that on the flip side of that too, these marketing companies have to remember that these dealers are seeking them out for a reason. They're seeking them out for their expertise. And as a marketing company, we are doing our dealers no good if we are just if we're just being an order taker.
Yeah.
If they wanted an order taker, they would hire somebody in the store to take all of their orders and execute them.
I got to put that on the OEMs as well, because the OEMs are coming in telling these dealers they have to have. Here's four choices. You have to do paid search, right? Here's your four choices. Right. And then they do a demo of a couple of those. And then whoever put the dealer in the ether had their eyes rolling back, going, oh my God, this is the greatest ever. That's the one they choose.
Yep.
I mean, you've got your dealer personas out there, your GM, DP personas. And I basically think there's four of them. There's the data minded dealer, right? He's the one that's, or she, they use data. They want to know how things work. They want to get into nitty gritty about things. Price doesn't matter, stuff like that. You've got the price conscious dealers, the ones that don't care about anything, don't understand how it is, but it's always too expensive.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, Jesus could come down and say, we're going to sell you an extra 100 cars this month for an extra $1,000. And they're going to like, I don't have $1,000 in my budget. Right. You've got the complainers, which they don't really understand the budget because maybe they don't have one. They're just going to complain about everything because they don't know how it works. Right. And then finally, you got the ball.
I have a name for every one of these.
Yeah. And then the last one I call the ballers, but I don't think they're the ballers. I think they're more the followers. It's because the number one Toyota store in the country is using it. We're going to use it too. Right. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even care what it does. And they tend to also be that the dealership across the street at the Chevy store that's their competition buys a bigger lawnmower, then they have to buy a bigger lawnmower too, right? That's so those are the four basic like dealer personas outside of you know, I guess the world of automotive retail or inside retail.
So under the umbrella of Tasca Auto Group, you guys also have, is it Tasca Racing?
Yeah, we have the Tasca Racing team. Yes.
So that's really cool. And you were telling us that you guys actually just had a really big record not too long ago. Can you tell everybody else about that? Because I think that's really neat.
So the Tasca family, the entire family is owners of the Tasca Automotive Group. And so I get about 13 different Tasca emails from Tascas every day. I work with one of them the most, which is Bob Tasca the third. And Bob Tasca is the driver of the Nitro Mustang Dark Horse funny car that we race in the NHRA. We were in Bradenton, Florida in February on an off NHRA type race. It wasn't sanctioned by NHRA, but the former record for the fastest race car was 339 miles an hour, 339.87 miles an hour.
Wow, that's so
we ran that exact mile per hour on Thursday night. And then Friday night, the following night, Bob ran 341 miles an hour, 341.68 miles an hour. And if you just think about that in context, like 341 miles an hour, right? You imagine just going out, like if you're standing on the side of the road and a car goes by, you're going 100, you know, imagine. So
it's just crazy. Yeah.
It's and the most amazing thing about that is it was in 1,000 feet. So we went to zero to 341.68 miles an hour in 1,000 feet.
What was the time on that? Like,
I think it was like a 3.84.
Wow.
3 seconds. So we usually average right around 335 miles an hour, 3.8, 3.9. But like, it's a sport that comes down to, you know, hundreds of a second. We just had an opportunity. We just got done winning the Las Vegas Four Wides 2 weekends ago. It was the last race we just had in NHRA. We're heading to Charlotte this weekend. And we just won the Four Wides. And we won it by like 0.02 of a second, right, against three other cars in the same time. So it comes right down to that. It's a very, very – if you like NHRA – or I'm sorry, NASCAR, but you also have attention deficit disorder, NHRA is the sport for you. 100%.
I love that. That's so awesome. So is racing something that you're passionate about outside of your professional life too?
It's a tricky question. I've been involved in the NHRA for 25 years now. Okay. Which is very, it goes back to that original conversation we had about doing the morning show on the rock station
right.
in Topeka, Kansas. So Topeka had one of the most pristine racetracks, drag strips in the country that the NHRA used to race at. My morning show, they told me when I got the morning show, you're going to be broadcasting live from this race weekend, you know, once a year. I did that for 8 years straight. I never saw one race. I met so many drivers. We partied so hard. Like that was our whole job is to, you know, get everybody to party, you know, concert going on. And then when I left radio and went to Vin Solutions, we all left Vin Solutions after the sale, went to Auto Alert. And at Auto Alert, we ended up sponsoring Bob Tasca's car.
Wow.
When Ford Performance kind of pulled out for a few years, the 3 or 4 or 5 years, we sponsored the car. So I got thrown back into the NHRA as a sponsor now because I ran Auto Alert Motorsports. So I'd go to all the races and we'd cover them that way too. And then I left again, went to Gary Crosley Ford. And then, of course, when Tasca merged with us, Bob came to me last year and said, hey, Joe, I need some help on, you know, content, on helping making the team run good, you know. So I don't have a passion for necessarily racing, but I have an absolute passion for the car that Bob drives. There's no place on this earth that I love being more than behind that vehicle right when it takes off from that starting line.
Wow.
We're talking close to 13,000 horsepower just exploding in front of you. So
would you
that's what I'm passionate about. Do I keep up on the, no, not really.
Would you ever drive the car?
No, I'm too big and I don't think I have enough insurance.
That probably requires
it. It sounds like maybe the racing is more passionate about you, Joey.
I know, it keeps coming back to you.
It just keeps following you.
It just is there. It's never been any of that kind of racing. It's always been NHRA. It's never been NASCAR. It's never been F1. It's never been Indy. It's never been any of that kind of. We had an exciting kind of this year. If anybody's like a NASCAR fan, you know the name Tony Stewart. Mm-hmm. Tony Stewart married a woman named Leah Pruitt a couple of years ago, who is a Top Fuel driver for the dragsters. She just stepped down and Tony Stewart just took her place. So Tony Stewart's actually racing in the NHRA now with our, not in our class, but in the Top Fuel dragsters, which is the exact same engine and everything that, that our funny car has. It's just built different. The little tires in the front, big tires in the back. So cool. He's brought some new faces and new attention to the sport.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that. Huh. There's a whole other world that exists
out
there.
I think about that
all the time, because we're also in like consumed and full of the automotive business and what's going on from day to day. And like, I just stop and think sometimes, like, there's a whole like real estate world out there. There's a whole medical world out there, and like agricultural, but like they have all the same crap going on that we do. And we never know it because we're just so consumed by this.
No, but I think it's crazy. Like, I think that Joey's a prime example of the opportunity that is in the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. Like, for your whole story is just so impressive, Joey, how you went from Vint Solutions and Auto Alert, and now you're in with this huge group and you're doing all of this marketing. And I know that you have a team behind you, but your team has to be led from somewhere. And it says so much about you that your team is doing so well and that you have come this far and have been able to make such an impact that you have.
Well, I can't take like all the credit for it. I have a passion within me, which is problem solving. I don't have kids. I've never been married, been in relationships and stuff like that. So I've never had those outside kind of distractions,
right?
You know, that I've had to focus on, like, traveling baseball team or Girl Scouts, or you know what I mean? Yeah. Or in-laws.
In-laws. So, that's a big one, Joey. Right? That one will get you.
So if you ask me, like, what am I doing on a Sunday afternoon, or like normally, I'm still problem solving. Like, I love the fact that we had our big executive meeting, our task meeting with all of our GMs. We're talking, you know, 30 plus GMs in a room, plus all the task and family. We're all there. And their goal, one car a day, one more car a day. Every single one of those stores selling one more car a day. So 30 cars more per store. My thing is, what am I going to do? That's a problem. How do I help solve that, right? Mm-hmm. If I can't solve that, how can I release some more budget? How can I dig into that and maybe make up that revenue through stuff we don't need, right? I put something out on LinkedIn and I pulled the trigger on it, which is, I believe chat companies have been gaslighting dealers for years now on that they have to have some kind of chat on their website. And it just hit me. And I'm like, why? Why do we need it? Because I'm looking at other websites and I'm seeing, first of all, like, I look at Zappos because we kind of are tailoring our SRPs to look more like Zappos, right? In automotive, we need to look outside of our industry to get a lot of those kind of like how the shopper's journey goes. But when I started looking at chat, I've never, ever clicked chat for anything unless it made me do it, let alone a large ticket item, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I put that on LinkedIn, I had the vendors coming back at me, talking to me like I was another vendor. I'm like, wait a minute. Guys, I'm a dealer. What are you talking? Why? Tell me I'm wrong. So we proved it wrong. We realized you either run into a position where you have a chat that I compare it to a bouncer at a bar. They either let everybody in. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with like the googaboos that are out there. Every single thing comes in. Somebody's going to write like, hey, I left my keys next to that rock next to your car wash. Right. And BDCs, dude, that's wasting their time. It's a waste of time. Or you have something like Podium, who is requiring four forms of like proof of who you are to be able to ask a question. And customers, they don't need to.
You
have so many call to actions on your website, so many. Plus you have your call to actions on your Google business listing. You know, if a customer really wants to know information, they're gonna communicate with you.
I actually think that the chat bot that keeps popping up when I'm trying to look on a website is more annoying than it being there. Like, than it
just especially on mobile, right?
Yes,
every
you can't
time
do
you
anything.
Screens, it pops back up again.
Yes.
Hey, not you. Sorry, it's always Jessica or Ashley or some basic white girl name.
Again, thanks.
And I'll tell you, the people that freaked out about it the most was the BDC agents at the stores, right? Except for a few. And then when they realized, oh, like no, we don't need this, right? Because they've been on it forever. Like, they, you have to have it. You have to have it. You have to have it. Just like you have to have CTAs on your SRP. Once I took the CTAs off the SRPs, everybody freaked out about that. Like, how's a customer going to submit a lead if, on the VDP? That's where they're going to do it. Yeah. I don't buy my shoes from the search results on Zappos. I click through, right, and look at more information there.
I go through the pictures, and I actually like what I see.
So we just, I don't know how we got down this tangent of me going. I've been on this chat for a while now. I've been so disappointed with the chat companies that, like, were trying to call me out, tell me I was wrong. Like, I have 33 plus websites that I took chat off of like 2 months ago, and nothing has changed.
And I'm sure you didn't lose any of your lead volume either.
No.
Like, at all.
We've made some tweaks and stuff where lead volume has gone down, but our sales and our shows and all of that have gone up.
Good.
Because of the quality of lead that we are pulling in now.
Right.
I'm not going to flood the floor with a bunch of just garbage leads. And you guys being a BDC, knowing how that works, like, that's another thing that freaked the BDC out. They're working 100 leads, and you know your show ratio is low is because you have garbage leads that are coming in, but they're constantly busy. They're constantly trying to, because you're reaching out to these bad leads, like, constantly doing, like, you got to send another text, I got to send another email. Well, if you have good leads, you have mid-funnel, you know, leads that are coming in, you don't have to do that much reaching out and following up and stuff like that, right?
Saves everybody time and money all along the way.
Absolutely. So,
but you get BDC agents that are like, I don't have anything to do. Yeah, you have a lot to do. You just don't have to respond to these garbage leads.
Yeah. So you've been in the industry for long enough that you've seen the hills and valleys that come along with it. In your opinion, where do you think the next 5 years will take us as an industry?
Where do I think? So get into futurism here, yes, right?
Well, you said in 2004, you saw that video and social media was going to be the future. So yeah, I'm
getting my my stock buying money out right now.
So EV is going to take a hit. Electric vehicles are going to take a hit. They're already taking a hit. They're already dropping majorly. I think the focus away from EVs and back to ICE is going to be there. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's kind of an unstable kind of area because we're still waiting to see if used car, you know, rates are going to be dropping. What we looked at was May, spring, that used car rates were going to drop. I think right now we're at 6.9 for an average used car rate. I think that does take a toll on the used car market a lot. New car incentives are coming in. We're pushing more new cars out there, creating more used cars. So those used cars are going to be coming in for trade. We got to do something about the rate, right? So I think there's going to be a big focus on used car sales coming up. Plus, vehicles are lasting longer. They're not, you know, unless...
That's a point that I haven't heard recently about how much longer vehicles are lasting, but I had that thought not too long ago too.
They seem to be that they're getting more mileage. And that all depends on the market too, right? If the market is down, if people are like, we're maybe leaning to a recession or we're in a recession or something like that, you see people holding onto their vehicles longer, which means service is going to go up. So service ROs are going to be through the roof, which means, you know, you got to be making better deals. I see just a focus on pre-owned for at least once the drop happens. There's a lot of dealerships out there that have a lot of inventory that they're stuck with.
They spend
a lot of money on. And I'm getting into sales operations, which I hate, but I have to market those, right? How do we market used cars? How do we market? A lot of times used cars just sell themselves when you're doing new, but they're not selling themselves at a high rate. You know, I don't know if on the BDC side of things, if you get a lot of people that are calling in just asking what an average rate is on a used, or if they're just getting sticker shock as soon as they go in the box, but
What are you guys
seeing? It happens occasionally. It's definitely not super often. We still get a lot of people focused on payment or down payment, stuff like that, because that's, let's be honest, people are just uneducated.
Right.
So buying, they don't know what to ask.
Okay. This just hit me. Changing the subject, but I'm going to stay on futurism. Okay.
Okay.
I believe the death of ego marketing, ego advertising is coming very, very soon. I think that it is about to really come to a fever pitch, which is going to trash a lot of traditional marketing, traditional avenues for advertising.
For the listeners, what do you mean when you say ego?
So ego advertising. Yeah. Oh my God, this pisses off a lot of people.
Good. Let's do it.
Let's go.
So my time in radio, this would have been 19, I left radio in 2008. So I'd have been 99 to 2008. The way that we sold radio, the highest closing rate to sell radio advertising, and there was only basically at the time, this is back before like internet radio, right? XM was barely coming out, a little bit internet, but it seemed like we only sold it to like cell phone carriers and car dealers. There was the only people buying any kind of like inventory on radio. And the way that you would sell it to a car dealer, you ready for it? Uh-oh. Is you would not sell it for ROI, you would sell it with ego. You get a dealer, you get a GM, you get a DP, be like, hey, listen, you know, why don't you buy this $10,000 a month ad, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Hey, guess what? You can do your own spots, like your voice. Like you can be up on the billboard. You're on TV. Wow. Not only you, but you can also put your kid on there too. Because you know what? People buy from people they trust. And they're looking at you and they're thinking, hey, I can trust this guy or I can trust this lady. And so what happens is the ROI does not come with how many units are being sold. The ROI turns into how many people told that DP or GM at the grocery store they saw him on TV, right? But that person that told him that they saw him on TV, did they buy a car from him? Most of the time, no. They just saw him. Like, oh yeah, you're the guy that does the annoying commercials and stuff like that. There's a difference between like ego marketing and what I like to say, my boy Terry down in New York, in North Carolina does, where he just does annoying marketing. He just wants to pay doesn't care that it's his name. But the ego marketing is ran so rampant of there's no ROI. There's absolutely none. And so that's the only way that you can sell a non-ROI in this world of KPIs and return on investment, how many clicked, how many went to your website, what your conversions were, blah, 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 blah. But the bigger that groups get, the single point mom and pop stores out there that do a lot of that ego marketing because they're sold by the local TV station because they don't know any better. By the way, ego marketing is not just in automotive, but it's also in furniture stores too. Look at just watch because ego marketing you can sum up a car dealer's ego marketing message with basically it's 3 to 4 points. We have the most inventory, we have the lowest prices, and we won't screw you because my daddy's daddy owned it before his daddy did, right? That's it. And you can come trust us.
Here's a picture of my kid because I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And everybody trusts dads, right?
Yeah. Like,
you don't trust me. Here's my 17-year-old daughter to let you know, or my 15-year-old daughter. I got to be careful because Crosley and I go back and forth on this. Yes. Oh. it's different when it's a message, when it's not, when you're doing it to get the message out is one thing. When you're doing it just for ego, it's another thing.
Right.
But I don't, with the Tasca group, with as many stores as we got, and this, what I was trying to say is the group level, ego marketing doesn't exist because they understand you put your money in the right places for the right message, the right customers, the right time. And that's how you advertise. This whole top of mind awareness is just drastically dropped. Maybe in the 60s and the 70s, when top of mind awareness was like, you know, when I ask you what, you know, fast food cheeseburger and you say Big Mac, McDonald's. Yeah, of course, because they loaded up those commercials and hit you every Saturday morning and Friday afternoon on TV. But in today's world with TikTok and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, your top of mind awareness is constantly changing all the time, right? Yeah. Constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And you're getting local stuff in there too. Like it's no longer the Big Mac at McDonald's. It could be now double at In-N-Out, or it could be right down the street at Tay's. So it depends on what's coming up in your feed.
No, you're right. 100%.
So something that I want to know, if you're willing to give a freebie to the world, what is the number one marketing tip that dealerships are getting wrong that is seriously freaking easy that they can get right?
Marketing?
Yeah. Or anything advertising, marketing. What's the one thing that you see most often that you're like, what idiots, man?
Stop spending money on bullshit for the feel-good moment or the I'm excited moment to try to flood leads. Oh, we got so many Ram 1500s on the lot. We got to, you know, up the spend. Take that money and that focus and work on your sales team. Work on the existing opportunities you have in the CRM, yep. Right? Work on how to actually sell a vehicle instead of like, if I throw 1,000 leads at you and you sell 20 cars, you sold 20 cars. Good job, right? I sell 100, throw 100 leads at you and you sell 20 cars, you still sold 20 cars, but it's so much better. It's right?
Right. Cost way less money.
Right? There's so many dealers that are stepping over $100 to pick up a dollar. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Because it goes back to the whole management thing. Because you sold a lot of cars and because you were good at closing and things like that, doesn't mean that you're good at other things. You're not good at management. Maybe you're not good at processes or strategy, but focus on what you already have in front of you and what you have in your CRM or what you have in like maybe an auto alert or in your service drive, instead of focusing, which comes down to this, conquest customers. I don't know what the obsession is with conquest customers. I have no idea why dealers are so
hot on it right now.
With conquest customers when they have a full database of customers they already sold to, right? In their system. We hired you guys for a list of ICIs, right? These are customers that Ford Motor Company decided to give them an extra couple a grand or hundreds of dollars, right? It's just taking the time to even just notify a customer, letting them know. These are previously sold customers, right? Hey, listen, maybe you're not in the market. Just want to give you a heads up. You should have got an email. You should have got something from Ford that said that you have this extra money. If you're only, it's like a coupon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coupon. It's your only coupon. And so, but we spend so much money on bullshit conquest. Customers never bought from us before. When NADA comes out and says, on average, it costs you $650 to $700 for a conquest customer to close a conquest customer. And it costs you $150 to $200 to close a customer that's bought from you before.
Wow.
When it comes to marketing and all that kind of good stuff. It just blows my mind.
Wow.
Stop getting put in the ether by fly-by-night vendors.
Right. You have so much to offer, Joey. If somebody wanted to reach out to you to pick your brain or for more advice, where could they reach you at?
Middle-aged superhero on TikTok.
I've got to write that down. I'm putting that link in our.
No, don't put it there.
Right.
You think I'm not? Hold on, I can turn my volume down so it doesn't blast. Whatever.
You can do it there. It's no big deal. Except I have it shut down where I can't receive messages on there because I have too many followers. Yeah.
Holy crap, 131,000.
Yeah, and I'm 49 years old. So a 49-year-old chubby middle-aged dude from Kansas City having 130,000 followers, the equivalency of 14 million by 25-year-old female from California.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's okay. Impressive.
Well, I'm going to spend hours today watching.
I know. I'm like, this is a bad idea. It's only 1:30.
I use that TikTok to test. So the industry said that I was some kind of social media marketing, like subject matter expert. NADA's had me speak in the past about social media. When TikTok came out, I was like, God, I got to learn social media because all my dealers are going to be saying, hey, we need to be on TikTok. Right. So testing things on TikTok, the reason I have that many followers is because of just testing things. And I found a good rhythm to TikTok about how you can build that up. And by the way, the answer to does your dealership need to be on TikTok? The answer is absolutely not. No.
No. I say the same thing. I have so many dealers that ask me, well, you guys are only working with Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. What about Snapchat and TikTok? And I'm like, if you guys want to do Snapchat and TikTok, keep it internal.
It's like, what do you mean we shouldn't be on
TikTok? Don't hire somebody to do that.
There's a Toyota store up in Detroit that's got 30,000 followers on TikTok. Like, yeah, one.
You follow businesses on TikTok?
Right. No, you don't.
Unless it's carpet cleaning. We all follow carpet cleaning for some reason.
Something like
that. I do follow carpet
rug cleaning. Mountain rug cleaning, let's be honest. I know.
We did a test at Crosley. Like, it's just because Crosley does have an account because I went to test things on there. And you do walk-arounds. Like, customers don't give a shit about any of that. They don't care.
No.
I did a digital dealer workshop, I think like 8 years ago, where it was, do you guys bleep the cuss words out here? Because I don't know how deep I go.
No.
And it was bleeped out, but it said, nobody gives a fuck that your dealership's on Facebook. That's what it was. Like that, nobody cares. Nobody cares except for your employees and maybe their family. That's all who care.
Mm-hmm.
But for TikTok, we do you guys follow like online drama at all? Like, or celebrity drama? Like,
definitely online drama caused me watching Love is Blind.
Justin Bieber's wife, whatever, somebody Bieber, and Selena Gomez got into an argument or something like that online or something like that. And so I went around and asked all the techs at Crosley, you know, are you team Bieber or are you team Selena? And all of them told me go F off, right? It was funny and it was topical at the moment. And not one time did we mention the name of the dealership. Not one time did we, you know, anything about that. And I think it's 600,000 views or something like that, right? So if you're going to do something like that, on, you got to make it entertaining. If you're going to do something like that, you got to think, what would your Netflix special be? Like, if your dealership is going to have a Netflix special, what would it be that people would watch?
I think of those things, and I think, like, you may not ever know your direct ROI if you're posting organically on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. But, like, I think about, so the person who sold me my car, I see him on Facebook, I see him on Instagram, I see him on TikTok, and all of his content across those platforms is different, but he's staying top of mind for me.
Because he's an employee, because he's a person, right?
Yeah.
He's not a store.
Right.
Like, I our stores, like, we don't post happy customer pictures. We encourage the salespeople, they can post them, and then we'll share them as a store in our stores, but we're not going to post that stuff. One, it's dangerous. We can get sued for not having a photo release as a business. But as an individual, an employee, they can post wherever they want to post, right?
As a salesperson, they don't have to stay corporate with it.
Yeah.
They don't have these guidelines that they have to follow. They can go have fun with it and make it fun and entertaining for their customer base.
There's a double-edged sword there. Because then if you have somebody who's really efficient on social media, let's just say Facebook, right? For an older crowd, because that's where they're at. They're collecting their own kind of Rolodex that's not inside the CRM, right? With all these people that are friending them.
You said Facebook is for older
people. I know. I'm like, is it? I'm 29. Only 30, Joey.
You're only on Facebook because you're in the car industry.
I don't use Instagram.
I don't use Instagram either. Instagram.
I don't think a dealership needs to be on Instagram either.
No. There's no ROI on Instagram at all.
No, that's, again, just awareness.
Ego marketing.
Ego. Yep, there we go.
Yep.
But they definitely can follow Bob Task of the Third on Instagram. TikTok. I'll tell you, I just sent an email to Bob this morning, or a text to Bob this morning. Facebook is still there. Facebook is, I mean, your average race fan in NHRA is a 58-year-old white man, right? We hit 3.3 million impressions for in the last 28 days. So Facebook is still there. There's still just an older kind of market there that are watching. Not saying you guys are older, but
whatever. We hear you.
But yeah, there's so many different platforms out there. You can't stay.
It's a lot. Yeah, it is. Well, and trying to keep up with what's relevant nowadays.
Oh my God.
Like,
and all
who's in charge of this?
All of the algorithms changing on you at any moment, anytime you go into Facebook or Instagram or any of the social media apps, you never know where one thing has moved to from one day to the next.
The thing is, just don't do it. Focus on your existing stuff first. Like, focus on your foundation. Focus on, Is your CRM set up right? You know, do you have automatic replies that are going out that you don't even know? Are you sending out emails, happy birthday to your car kind of emails and stuff? Like, get all that under control first. Get rid of all that. Take chat off your website. You don't have to do that, but I'm just saying, if you're in my market, keep your chat on. How's your phone ups, right?
Right.
Who's shit in the bed when they call the dealership? What
are they even being logged in your CRM? Man,
right. Like, so instead of like focusing about bitching that you're not on Instagram, maybe check and see if your team knows how to answer the phone, right? Or even call every phone number that's listed out there. I at Crosley, it's my fault. We had a phone number that was going to just a straight voicemail, right?
Oh, no.
On Google for a service department. It was just going, and nobody had access to that voicemail. Nobody. And it was full of customers going, hey, is my car going to be done by 5 o'clock today? Right. So.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
But the problem is that exact problem is probably affecting like at least 3% of dealerships in this country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
At least. I said at least.
Put a zero on that thing.
Oh, yeah.
30.
That's just the painful truth. What do they call it in the Ugly Truth, that movie?
I had there's so many little things that you can do to make things better. Like one of my OEMs, I'm not going to call them out, but they were saying something about how we lost a half share percent in market share for an area, right? And I came back to him and I said to him privately through an email, I said, listen, we'll take our chops of maybe we didn't sell enough cars or a region didn't sell enough cars, but the fact that you guys make us use dealer.com for our website should also be a factor why we're losing market share or why we haven't caught market share, right? So it's about testing everything and looking at everything and understanding, you know, so you don't become, you don't know what you don't know,
right?
So sending in test leads, calling, secret shopping yourself, not relying on the OEM to do it for you. Looking at your website, is your website easy to navigate? Take your website and compare it to something that you use every day, like Amazon. They may be different levels of what you're spending, but still is it. Can I give you one little quick one real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay. Bob would probably kill me for sharing this, but I'm going to share it anyway.
Bob, stop listening. Close your ears.
Go to a dealership website and look on the front page. And you can do it on mobile, do it on desktop. And look at the front page. Look at the index page above the fold. And most dealerships you're going to see has a drop-down search, right? Pick my year, pick my make, pick my model, pick my bop, right? And then you hit enter, and then it pulls up the SRP where all the vehicles are, right? How many people do that in their regular world? Nobody. We live in a Google society, right? We live in a world where you go into search bars all the time and type in keywords of what you look. And just look at dealership websites about how they're antiquated, about they don't have a search bar front and center if something's up on your index or home page. They have a little magnifying glass up in the corner that you have to click that comes down, right?
Do
so
we
that's
think
just one little thing to look at on is the customer journey, is the customer, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
I know most millennials that will go into a Google search bar and type in the actual URL of where they want to go to, facebook.com, hit enter, and then hit the Facebook results, right? We are a Google society. We are a search society, but yet 90% of our websites are not set up as user-friendly a Google society.
So my question with that is, do we think that was created for the people who can't spell Hyundai?
Or Telluride?
No, I think it was created by somebody who convinced somebody else that they knew customer journeys and websites.
That's probably fair.
You know what I mean?
I would be very interested to see an A/B test of that and like customer journeys over X amount of time and who clicked that box as opposed to finding the magnifying glass.
You can tell a lot about, and especially in a dealership with a GM, you sit down with a GM and they're gonna show you something on their website that they don't like or they want on their website, and they immediately jump on their desktop and they type it in direct and they go to the front page and they say, look at this right here. And you're like, well, 76% of your traffic actually looks at it on here, right? So why aren't we doing this first, right? Yeah. What's it look like there? Or they demand that their banners are at the top of their page, like, and I want banners that have rainbows and big things. Like, nobody clicks on the banners. Nobody clicks on the banners.
Right.
People are showing up on your website through searches. That's just how it is. They're showing up on your website. They're in up your SRPs, your VDPs, your special pages, right? Let's look at that journey before you start wanting to put giant buttons on the front page that look good on a desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on your phone, CTA stacks just get in the way.
Yeah. I encourage you, check out like taskaffordri.com. Look at the SRPs there, especially on a mobile. Clean. Look at the schedule service pages. We're still cleaning a lot of this stuff up on this website. You know that right now. Just I just think that maybe it's the fact that I just don't have kids and I've never been married and I'm obsessed with this. You looking it up? You
see
she
up?
Is.
Look at the SRPs on there. The SRPs are clean.
Oh, so clean.
Yeah, because people, it's make, model, year, picture, price, and then I had to stick stock numbers on there because my BDCs were like, we have to have a stock number.
Yeah.
So
something I'm noticing that's interesting here that's also controversial is call for price.
Yeah, so that already, I can read this email to you right now because like I said, I'm in sales operations, or not in sales operations.
Right.
And pricing is in sales operations. So I go back and forth with my man, Carl Tasca. And I just sent an email to him that said, are we good with start listing MSRP on the new vehicle SRPs and VDPs for the Tasca New England stores? Right.
Yes, please.
And Yeah. So they're going by the market. They're looking at the market. So most New England Ford stores are not putting price on there. So I'm not in sales operations. But yeah. Right. Good call out.
I'm sorry. Is this, am I understanding right that this store alone has 441 new vehicles?
No, we share inventory.
Oh, okay. I was like,
so we have insane. We have a Ford store in Seekonk, Massachusetts, which is just right across the border from Rhode Island. We have a store in Berlin, Connecticut. So they're all within kind of within 100 miles of each other in a circle or radius. So they share inventory.
This one's pulling Cranston.
Yeah, Cranston, Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Providence. Yeah.
I like this. This is so clean and organized. Mm-hmm. More vehicles per page. This is clean.
Yeah, and look at the front page on that too. Like it's just
it had the search bar.
Yeah.
And put the banners below.
Yeah,
the
there we go. There's the search bar.
Right across the front.
I like it. It's very clean, very organized, and not 900 advertisements in your face at the same time. And no chat box.
Right.
Yeah, you see that? No chat. Nobody cares. And the last about that, the chat company said, you know, who's gonna answer the customer's questions, you know, at midnight? Like nobody.
If they want to know bad enough, they're gonna submit a lead and then we're gonna call them tomorrow morning.
Right. You know what else we're getting rid of? You ready? About us pages or meet the staff pages.
Okay.
You know the only people that go to the meet the staff pages are creepy people to see what their female BDC agent or person looks like. They're just going there to see like, I don't know what Ashley looks like.
Either, but that kind of
that makes sense.
I could see it. Like I have been I've fallen victim to that. Like I know how that feels.
I was thinking vendors like trying to figure out, all right, who's the GM? Who's the service manager?
That's the other part.
Yeah.
Crosley still has it, but I put up pictures of famous actresses for our BDC agents. Oh, not the regular pictures on there.
That is hilarious.
I love that.
Do you try to pick one that looks like them or just like
a random? Yeah. And I gotta be careful too, because we have some I'm a white dude, right? And we do have some Hispanic speaking BDC agents. So I don't want to be like, I asked them, who do you think you look like? Instead of me just going out there saying, oh, this Hispanic lady looks like this Hispanic lady. And then they come back and say, well, I'm Dominican.
Right.
I think she's Puerto Rican. I don't know if they're still considered Hispanic.
Yeah. So that's how we work, but we're getting rid of all those as well. We're just cleaning up the websites, making them clean, making them efficient. And before anybody goes on my sites and judges them, remember, we're still in the middle of this construction. Like
are gonna like watch the show and go leave him a whole bunch of bad reviews now.
I'm good for it. Like reach out and be like, this is horseshit, Joey. Why do you do this?
Get ready.
Out of pure curiosity, what's your main audience on TikTok?
middle-aged single women.
Shocker.
Because I did ridiculous lists of middle-aged single men and middle-aged single women you should avoid if you're in the dating scene.
I saw that.
Yeah, just ridiculous lists. Just ridiculous lists. Like, never date a woman who puts more than an ounce of syrup on their pancakes. Doesn't make any sense, but it riles people up.
I do that.
Well, I'm just saying, but that's the thing. It's like, there's no rhyme or reason behind anything that I said. Right.
It's just controversy.
Yes.
There's three things that'll make you go viral on TikTok. One is using a term that not a lot of people are familiar with. But they're like, so they'll ask in the comments, like, what is this? You know, number two is make something controversial against a lot of people that do it. You know, like I said, never date a middle-aged man who wears flip-flops anywhere besides the pool or the beach. Right? Well, there are people coming in saying, I live in Florida. I don't mean anything by that. And the last one is when you put things on the screen for your videos, always spell something wrong. Always.
I saw that. You did, it was a C-O-N word and you used C-O-M. And I was like, I wonder if you meant to do that.
Absolutely. Because you will get the grammar police that come in and leave you comment after comment after comment.
Oh my God, that's so brilliant.
Never date a middle-aged man who can't spell blah, blah, blah.
That is so funny.
Holy crap. Where was it?
I
just saw it. It was like that one. It was like emergency press conference. There it is. Conference.
Yep.
100%. Oh,
that's hilarious. Okay, I'm going to be spending hours watching your videos.
You're so going to get on spike. I was going to say, you're going to get on TikTok and have like a whole bunch of new likes and views and they're all going to be from us.
It's okay. Right now, I just have a bunch of fake profiles. of fake profiles that are using adult entertainment actresses pictures. So yeah.
I had to stop using. I actually made a new Instagram because I got back when I was into powerlifting, I got some like weird fake accounts that were like following gym hashtags or something like that, and I couldn't get rid of them.
It's a weird world to be in.
Yeah.
Put yourself out there. There's not a lot of people that can handle that amount of attention.
This was so much fun. I honestly,
I can't believe it's already been almost an hour.
Yeah. I learned so much from you, and this was a good conversation. And I think that we provided a lot of value to, anybody in industry, any industry listening to this.
Like, I think so too.
There were some good little nuggets dropped here.
Can I say one last nugget?
Yes. Absolutely. Do it.
Stop relying on your BDC manager, your BDC director to also be your marketing director.
That was probably
so. You're way, way, way out of touch with reality. Yep. Stop doing it. Stop having your BDC manager having the phone calls with your paid search company. Stop doing it.
Yes.
You know what is the amount of times that I, as an outsourced BDC manager, have been tasked with that.
Yes. I had that in mind whenever you said that.
Isn't that scary?
Like, you know what that's like? That's like asking your chef in your kitchen at your restaurant to also be your bartender. It just doesn't work.
Nope. Doesn't. I will do it. I don't like doing it. I have a level of expertise and it's over here, not over here.
So there was once upon a time that we wanted to offer lead analysis as a paid service that we would do for dealers, because we just kept being asked if we would do it, except for the only person that has the analytical brain is this one. And she's like, not no, but hell no, you can't pay me enough to do it. And over my dead body, are you going to sell this as a service? Because I want nothing to do with it.
Take the money that you're spending on ego marketing on this bullshit advertising that you're doing just to make. So you have your friends that see you on the billboards, take that money and invest it in a quality marketing manager to work at your dealership, right? Doesn't have to be a full-time position, can be part-time, but hire somebody to do that. Stop spending all this crap money on bullshit and stop having your BDC manager, and yelling at them because you're not showing up on the first page search results.
Yeah, so. Right. It is hard enough to manage a BDC and all of the things that change in that. And every time you guys want to add a new lead source, let alone having to be the one to communicate with those lead sources and then back with the GM and then still manage your team of drama toddlers.
Right.
100%. All right, Joey, thank you so much for your time today. We have seriously had so much fun with you on the show. In a world where you can be anything, remember to be kind, because you never know what battles somebody else is facing out there in the world. So while out in the world this week, remember to light it up. I'm Jess.
I'm Chester.
And that's Joey. And we've been the Chicks in Charge. Thank you guys so much for listening.
See ya.
Yay, you've made it this far. And if you want to help the chicks out and add some value, make sure you subscribe right now.
Click that little red button down below. Do it. Do it now.